Very much. Shall we get a team from the bank which has also introduced themselves so that by the time we come to engagement, we don't start by introducing because it will be definitely a flow from there. Starting with the chairperson, if you can introduce the delegation.
Good morning. My name is Eugene Iverson. I'm the chairperson of the Bank Sita Council. To my left is Max Makubala, he's the CEO of the Bank Sita. Behind Max is Berna Berta, she's the CFO, and next to her is the Makati City, she's the corporate services head at the Bank Sita.
Thank you very much. Shall we start with a presentation from that picture? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. First of all, on behalf of the Sita, I'd like to express my sincere thanks and appreciation, of course, to the Minister of Higher Education and Training, the Honourable Chairperson, Mr. Fransman, and in this instance, Ma'am, myself, and Honourable Members of the Committee. It's a pleasure, and we appreciate the call to share some of our food and sector industry issues to you. An overview of the presentation, but before I do that, you do have copies in your packs, as well as a copy of the annual report. And should you require further insight, we've included a corporate video of Foodversita and the industry. I think that might provide a really deeper insight into start with an overview of the food and beverages manufacturing sector. We'll look at funds management, our performance as a sector in respect of the National Skills Development Strategy. We'll look at customer satisfaction, customer relations with our industry. And I understand from the Department of Higher Education and Training that the committee has requested info, a special emphasis on the following strategic plans for this current financial year, 2010 and 11, typically strategic plans and advisors. You've also requested a SWOT analysis of our organization. We express an interest in provincial allocations and youth unemployment. Honorable Chair will attempt to shed some highlights on this. Economic characteristics and overview of food and beverages manufacturing sector. Just some economic characteristics. It's a very diverse sector spanning all of the food and beverages manufacturing companies, from chocolates to wine to cheese to biscuits to pro-neutral, etc. So a very wide sector. Typically, all of the products we see in Pick and Pay, the manufacturers of those products form part of the food and beverage manufacturing sector. The products are very price sensitive, as you imagine, because a lot of it is basic needs of the industry. It's characterized by high production volumes and it's a very cost-driven industry, capital-intensive and technology-driven. We find that there's intense brand competitiveness. My last point on that slide, Honorable Chair, mergers and acquisitions relate largely to brand acquisition in our industry. So it's characterized by mergers and acquisitions to a great extent. You find that there's a dominance of large companies and multinationals in the sector, and there's a large proportion, 85%, of small food manufacturers in the sector. Some typical companies, Honorable Chair, food and beverage manufacturing sector, South African Breweries, Kellogg's, Nestle, Frito-Lay, some ABI, Coke, Tiger Brands, Beacon, Cadbury, Distel, KWB, etc. Those give you an indication of the industry that food and beverage is. Some economic characteristics, in terms of manufacturing sector output to total GDP, the whole manufacturing sector, not necessarily only the food there, amounts to about 28% of GDP. And of that 28%, food and beverage manufacturing's contribution is 18%. The wages comprise 13.7% of the manufacturing sector. You can see from that, produces 18% of the output at a wage cost of 13.7%. GDP contribution is around 5% of the economy, and employment is to produce at 5% is 2% of the total economy. All in all, you see from a labor efficiency point of view, and that particular perspective, a very, very efficient sector. Total employment estimated at around 220,000, of which 80% are from large companies. Companies registered with FoodBev are around 7,500, of which only 1,800 are levy paying companies. We'll look at some financial performance data. Here we have an income expenditure trend over a period of time, 2003-2010. And you'll see on the yellow bar that that's the approximation of the 100% of levies that the industry pays. And of that, the 80%, which is the green bar, is what is transferred to food bases. In terms of expenditure rates, the blue bar shows you our expenditure rate. In the next slide, I'll just give you some comments on this. We've had an unqualified audit report in this last financial year, and I might add that we've had unqualified a healthy amount of money is being plowed back into the industry. The cash surplus that we report on our financial statements is only 7 million, and that 7 million is going to be plowed back, or is plowed back into grants for our industry. We do have a particular challenge in the industry in that companies do not complete their learning programs for which we provide grant funding. In the, perhaps I cannot say required time, but in the norm of around 1 year to 15 months. And what that does, it increases our cash on hand in the organization. And our message to the industry has been to accelerate the progress of learning programs to reduce cash on hand. Honorable Chair, I'm not sure in terms of protocol what you require. Should I finish the presentation with questions at the end?
We'll take the presentation and then answer the end. But you've got to, I know that your presentation is quite long.
Well, I will run through the certain part of it. Because you do have all of the documents and all the information in your hands. In terms of our sector's performance in respect of the National Skills Development Strategy, which is embodied in the service level agreement for 2009-10, large and medium companies, we've been able to exceed our targets, 125% in both instances. In terms of small companies, we've exceeded our target there, 132%. BEE companies supported 150%. Achievements. Abbott levels 1 to 4, entered onto Abbott level. Really, I think, very special emphasis on this, over the last few years. And this is and we've achieved 272% for people that have entered on these Abbott programs and a completion rate of 671. And here, particularly, I'd like to add that we used recognition of prior learning, RPL, as the process. We assess the people and they are placed at various average levels. And it just yields a very, very positive result. Learning programs, honorable members, when you talk of learning programs, we're talking about learnerships, about skills programs, about apprenticeships, internships or work experience, and bursary schemes. And that is the mix of products that comprise learning programs. And in both in these instances, we've exceeded our target. Small or non-levy paying companies, non-government organizations, community-based co-ops, etc., we've exceeded that target as well. For the unemployed, learning programs, we've exceeded targets again, 211% and 131%, and it comprises those five interventions that I mentioned earlier. Right? Learnership skills programs, apprenticeships, bursaries, and enhancements, work experience. A special target that we've had in work experience, we've had a number of students from, especially from technicons and from universities, undergoing work experience from companies, and we found that we did not need to take any more, and we had to concentrate on the placement of these people. And I'm happy to report that we've been able to place 69 in this last financial year. New venture creation, we found that we've got a lot of people in the pipeline, and our emphasis again was to assist them to show that they're operational 12 months after the training is that their little businesses are operational and we've been able to record a good result. Institutes of Sexual and Occupational Excellence, we've assisted one and they're on the way, and Honorable Chair, by the end of this financial year, we will have formally five Institutes of Sexual and Occupational Excellence in our industry. Some examples of them will be South African Milk Processing Organization, WineTech, as an example, the Institute of Brewing and Distilling, etc. typical examples of our institutes of sexual and occupation medicine.
You've mentioned Christian training providers, you've had a challenge of 4 weeks. Five, and they're on the way to getting accreditation as eventual creation training providers. And here, ma'am, we tried to look at training providers of this program in the more, how shall I put this, less economically advantaged provinces in South Africa. We had a positive audit result from South African Qualifications Authority, and that brings us to the metrics in terms of our service level agreement in respect of the National Skills Development Strategy. On a yearly basis, we measure what we call customer satisfaction, and we've been doing this for many years now. This is a measure of how well we are servicing our industry. And I've provided a graph for you that just gives you the last 4 years. Our customer satisfaction rates, and this is the consolidation of customer satisfaction. And Honorable Chair, I've included a normal distribution curve just to give you a feel for the performance. And I'm happy, I think my chairman is very happy, that year on year you find that the graph leans heavily on the positive side. So it indicates that our customers are generally very happy with the service that they receive from the U.S. system. Major highlights of this financial year, we exceeded our targets in this financial year. We achieved an unqualified audit report. And my chief finance officer says, no, it's not a major highlight. In fact, it's a standard. You should achieve it. Nothing to show off about the minimum standard. But I'm happy to report that we've achieved that, and we've done that for 10 consecutive years. Our strong focus has been on artisan development, processing and packaging operations, leadership and management development. And I'm proud to announce that during the World Cup of this year, we signed agreements with the city of Johannesburg and the Royal Bafokeng Nation, where we trained the vendors in the fan parks, two fan parks in Johannesburg, being in Sandton and one in Soweto, on things like food hygiene, food safety, and customer service. And similarly, we've done that in Rustenburg as well. So that's our little contribution to the success of the World Cup. Annually, in respect of our service agreement with the Department of Higher Education and Training, and previously with the Department of Labor, there is a rating or a score that they assign to the performance in respect of that service agreement. And this, for the last financial year, we've been able to record a 4.8 out of 5 score. And I'm giving you the scales, you can see that. They call that an excellent rating. You might say that this is a shot in the dark. It's a once-off thing, but I can provide you year-on-year performance ratings, and you see that there's an abundance of excellent ratings. Ma'am, your committee's specific emphasis required a SWOT analysis, strategic plans and budgets for this year, provincial allocations, and youth unemployment, and I'll try and address those in the slides following this. SWOT analysis, we looked at typically potential key strengths, and this is really a self-evaluation. We feel that we have core competencies in key areas, adequate financial resources, and well thought of by the market, well-conceived operational strategies, insulated from strong competitors. We have proprietary technology, that's food receiver or any receiver, typically the only one that can register a learnership, as an example. Cost advantages, better advertising campaign, we feel we can do better in that, so we didn't rate ourselves very highly in that. Product innovation, proven management, and ahead on the management curve. And ma'am, here I'm happy to report that myself and three of my senior management team members have 10 years experience in the UFC system. So experience curve benefits are there. Better processing capability, I feel that we can do better. Superior technology skills, I also feel that we can do better as an area to improve. No clear strategic direction, we do have obsolete facilities now, subpar effectiveness, lack of magic, well, all of those are plagued by internal operating problems. We've never had such an issue. I think my board and council members are very glad for that. Sorry, am I audible to everyone? No. Okay. I'll try. Weaknesses, we feel that none really to report in terms of too narrow product range, weak market image, finance for changes, etc. In that instance, we're really okay. External opportunities, yes, the opportunity to serve more customers, to enter new markets or market segments, expanded product line, yes. Related products, we feel that we can look at that. There is an opportunity. Faster market growth, we need to look at the growth of our sector, our industry. Low-cost competitors, we say no, because, of course, the CISA does not have a competitor. It's the only organization in that sector that does what it's supposed to do, basically. However, there could be substitute products, and perhaps non-accredited products might become a more attractive, perhaps cheaper substitute. Regulatory environments, yes, costly regulatory environments. Typically, as an example, we need to report to some 7 different government departments in a financial year. You know, finance, treasury, Reserve Bank, as an example, different government departments. In our instance, Department of Agriculture and Trade and Industry. Vulnerable to recession, yes. Business needs change, yes. And yes, that brings us to the end of the SWOT analysis. But I think as a comment to close that off overall, is that it seems that UBSCDA as an organization is favorably placed to face challenges for the future. You required a look at a glimpse of our strategy in this financial year and our budget. Just give you a quick overview. Industry, 46 million towards the NSF administration, etc. And that's just a breakdown of our income streams, revenue splits, the budget splits. In the slide following this, I'll show you how we intend or how we are spending. This is just some of our discretionary projects, and I've used the pie graph here to give you a proportional feel. For instance, the red, you see there's an emphasis on our side of focus, leveraging funds towards learnerships. Similarly, on the purple, I don't know if that's purple, but purple side, purple pie, small businesses, non-daily bank companies, non-government organizations, etc. The yellow we leverage towards work experience grants, and this, I understand, is a concern of yours. It's something that would assist directly with the youth unemployment problem in our country. Provincial spread and youth unemployment. Honorable Chair, I've given you a pie graph to illustrate where the employees of food and beverage manufacturing are located. You find that 53% of them are in Gauteng, 29% in Western Cape, and 90% in KwaZulu-Natal. These are where the factories are, the companies are. And of course, in order to do an apprenticeship, work experience, learnership, skills program, you have to have a company. So our focus necessarily has to be in those provinces. We do have projects in other provinces, though. our initiatives are largely tied to where the company is at. However, in terms of youth unemployment, our entrepreneurship development program, new venture creation, we committed this year $1.5 million to that. In terms of supporting them to have sustainable businesses, using mentorship business plan linkages with SINA, an example, Cipro registrations, we do all of that. Community-based organization grants, $1.8 million, and of course, directly related to youth unemployment. Although apprenticeships, mentorships, and skills programs do address that, this one directly relates to that, and that's the $1.10 million that we committed. Spread of projects, there's new venture creation projects and non-government organization projects. On the rotation, you can see on the map that we have quite a spread. We have projects in the Northern Cape, Northwest, the Popo, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, etc., East Cape, so forth. So we do make an attempt to try and address, to some extent, the needs all over South Africa. And Honourable Chair, that brings me just about to the end of my presentation. And before I share with you my last slide, if I may be so bold as to request if the committee can provide assistance to Food Bear Seeker, then I feel that the assistance should be in trying to uplift the negative image of SECA in general that has been created by the media in the last 10 years. And largely I believe the negative image of the SECA was due to improper or perhaps incorrect understanding of the role and function of SECA. And I've included this next slide specifically, ma'am, because the Minister of Higher Education and Training at the Skills Summit on the 9th of September, in his little excerpt from his speech, and of course, CETAs do not provide training. They have a legal duty to disperse 80%, well, not 80%, I think 70%, but the minister is new at the CETA world, so we'll forgive him, but 70% of skills development levy funds, and constituted in government structures to represent a partnership between the government, business, and labor. Direct skills training in various sectors. The CETAs also work at different levels of the training hierarchy and are intermediaries, I've underlined that word, intermediaries between business and training institutions using organized networks. And largely, the focus of CETAs is legislatively workplace training. And you find that media, with respect, some politicians want the CETA to be a panacea to quite a few of the land's socio-economic ills, and it's not possible in all instances. So, ma'am, that brings me to the end of my presentation, and I thank you very much on behalf of Food Bear Seeker.
Thank you very much, CEO. Just to note about the mentioning some documents you've got up in the 2 minutes,
I think I can just basically endorse what Ravina just said, and I think the Food Bear Seeker over the last 10 years that we've seen from the presentation that made good progress in all spheres. But I think I've also just endorsed that to make the Seeker effective is also what the image is out there, and I think they also. I want to support what Ravine was saying, that we need all the support we could get to make it more effective. That's all I have to put in respect.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And with all the clear to go to members, just to engage with the presentation. I noted what you had said on the issue of the image of the CETAs and how the CETAs for the past serious double traffic a negative impact. Justifiably in certain instances and not justified in certain instances. And I believe that, I think this is what the view of the committee has always had, that it's based on how we interact with the public as teachers, all of us. That's this image, how we engage stakeholders, that they are able to clearly understand what the role of the teachers are. Because it's the reason that you still even put that statement by the minister is because you have a sense that the public does not understand the role of the teachers. And the question becomes that after so many teachers have been established, why do we have the public that do not understand the role of the teacher? So it goes to all of us. But clearly it's not maybe out of the public's doing that they would bash the teacher. It's the understanding that they have of the role of the teacher. And it's all of us responsibility to try and clear that role by the teachers themselves and all of us who are stakeholders and players within the sector of the schools. Because it becomes a bit of a frustration that you speak to people today, they still don't understand what teachers do and how we do. But I think one thing, having interacting with you for the first time as a committee, there are quite a number of issues that we find that we raised from our side. But I think even the improvement would go as we go to the strike plan. Because I think it becomes easier if as a committee we have interacted and engaged on the strike plan first, and then so that we give more or less a direction in what we think should be. But appreciating the report, and more than anything, appreciating the clean audit. As a portfolio committee, we hold a view that we are happy when an institution has a clean audit. Because for us, it says that we do not have to battle and be stressed about the financial management. The important part that we see as a portfolio committee is the performance. But the clean audit must translate to a performance of an institution. So when you have a clean audit, we've got to see the output of that clean audit. That yes, the money has been spent, but is it resulting in what we see as politicians as service delivered in the past? Are we getting value for money? Yes, it has been spent properly, but is there value for money in what we spend as this country on it? And that question now today is faced with you, to say that as we look at the money that has been spent, having a clean audit, is there the value of what we want to achieve in changing the lives of our people, of all South Africans, in making sure that we are able to have all of us saying that the money has been spent properly, but we see the results because it changes the life. And overall, attaining what we hope to achieve and as the money is. I have a couple of issues, but before I can come, maybe let me give members of the portfolio to interact with the report, through comments, questions, obviously. And then we'll be able to. I'm going to try and manage my time today. So, members, I think I'm going to open the floor. Depending on how much input each makes, if it takes longer, I will not come to the second round. But let's try and be precise in our inputs. I'll start with Honorable Moshona, as the Honorable Van der Westhuizen. Honorable Bojan, Honorable Nelson, Honorable Khatere, those are the hands I didn't get. The way I've noted you, Honorable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also appreciate. like to appreciate the important part of us and assist us to understand what you are doing. I only want to check why you are concentrated in counting. I see these other provinces. The percentages are very long. They are showing low ways and places. So that is there a plan to turn that around and maybe help these factories in rural areas, not as well? And also I know that you do not provide training. Is there a plan for you to change that into maybe advocacy workshop? Because clearly people do not understand what teachers do, but there is need for them to understand because you are doing a wonderful job. Leadership, I see we have a higher system in place. But then I want to change that into advocacy workshops where you go and inform people what you do and try to make sure that people participate for you. Because we believe that we see we can do more. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mush. Honorable
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. As always, I'm more interested in what wasn't said than that was said. Just a few questions to you, and I'll be brief. The first one is, can you please expand on what the effect of this short-term license that you're currently operating under? What is the effect of that? Hasn't it got a detrimental effect on your operations? The second one is the possible merger of FoodBev CETA with some of the other CETAs. Has that created uncertainty? Has that impacted on your functioning? The third one, I'm always concerned when people exceed targets by a factor of 3. It tells me you're operating still in a very volatile environment, an environment that you yourselves are not very sure where you should be putting your targets. Am I right in saying that? Or did FoodBev CETA suddenly this year did twice as well as could have been expected? Next question, how many certificates have you issued for full qualifications achieved? I missed that, or you didn't say that. And then lastly, if you could just expand on the quality assurance task that you, unfortunately, the ETQA manager isn't here, but to quality assure the training the rural areas or over the length and breadth of this country, I think that must be quite a challenge. And if you could just tell us how you overcome that challenge. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable President. Honorable Bonchan.
Thank you, Chair. I must first acknowledge my disadvantage in the fact that such as I've been under the Department of Labour and I'm not okay with some of the goings on. For instance, I'm intrigued by the statement that by the Minister, which you also support, that you are not responsible for training. But I look here at your slide where you've assisted about 700,000 workers to achieve a bit level 4. How do you reconcile these two? You assist, but you are not responsible for training. How do you account, even if this is not here, how do you account for the money that you just disperse money and that's all? How do you not control, but how do you continue on as being responsible for this long process of providing skills? Because I must understand that this is your focus. Skills. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable
Nelson.
Thank you, Chair. Your company is my company in Gauteng, in full-time and some of the services. What then is the strategy to get students from the more rural areas trained? Is this a strategy in place? Because obviously your place should be in those areas where these companies are. BAs practically around that. And then also onto the school qualification. Number of bursaries that have been awarded, can you have those students have they completed all the in the industry and can you track that? Learnerships that have been granted to students as well, do you have track of those people as well that you know normally where they are, how many of them are employed, how many are unemployed?
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Honourable Khata.
Thank you, Chair. Sincere apologies for arriving late. I was just caught up at the Chief of Office.
My life has been here, Chair.
Chair, my question relates to the projects of learnerships that the city is providing vis-a-vis employment projection. Because you can provide learnerships, trainings, but if it doesn't respond to employment, it's a future exercise. So I want to check in terms of the capacity and the realization of employment thereafter. And also, what is the output. But also maybe these are questions my members will just ask, but mine would be slightly specifically towards what I already say, it's a principle that one must stick to of the state of the nation address that the president of this South Africa. That if honestly we listen to what the president says, therefore also our strategic plans must go within that line. That in terms of your demographic spread of your provincial spread of employees, have you considered the issue of rural development in its own context? Because I believe that's the gist of the matter that the president wants to see at the end of the day. Because I understand you put your spread along most of it, more than 50% around Gauteng. But my concern is that if you had any consideration of what the president projected in the state of the nation address, and what is happening around that issue? The other thing, last chair, that I want to check, your response towards youth unemployment. My question is that if I can just get an understanding, which youth do you tap in addressing unemployment? Do you check in within this 2.7 million of unemployed youth, or you just go, you go spread to say, you just say even the one that just come out of school, or I just want to check, because also we need to address this issue that after the students' rights exams, what happened to them? Are they adding towards the current statistics that you're having, or you are trying to also choose within that, so that we'll be able to understand that when young people are going around the street saying they are unemployed, what is the reason after? And how do you respond as a teacher? Yes.
Thank you. I have one honorable
Chairperson, I'm a new member on this committee. But I would like to understand this performance scorecard. What criteria was applied for this performance? Could you please give us some more explanation and details on that one? And then on the map, the provincial street in poverty alleviation, would you please also explain what does it entail? You referred to NVC and NGO. Please, some more on that. And then the gentleman before me referred to the unemployed youth. Do you only focus on the unemployed youth? Only the youth? Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members, for those comments. I know that you might have wanted to go in detail. And unfortunately, we still have another question, but I think I'm trying to manage the time. A couple of questions that have come through, and I hope you've noticed from all the members, which I'll give to you to answer. And then just to, while you're answering that, if you can give us on your split of provinces as well, in connection with SDGs, the link is the system of SDGs. Anywhere that you do with SDG quality, or anything that you, and which, if you do, which are those, which provinces that you do with. The other thing that I could not pick up, your percentage of your sector in reporting on WSPs, and its relation to ATI compliance within that. Does your work-based skills plan also the reporting line, the things you drive, but as well, when the companies report on the annual training report, does that match to do the analysis of what they completed on the diagnosis and the Asia? What are the issues? I think other issues have been covered by members, but lastly, from my side, maybe to go to the department, but somehow, at some point, we need to engage. There's inconsistency in terms of features, how your remuneration of your board is. Board members, sensitive, which my feel would be somehow we need to come with. I don't know whether there's a criteria for features in terms of how much you are able to give sensitive. Others you find they're extremely high, others you find they're extremely low in terms of that. And I think that we should somehow, as the department, find a way of pronouncing on that if we do not have. But if we do have, if you can just show us what are those guidelines that guide how boards get remunerated in the future. Since we've interacted with the teachers, it's extremely different. Quite very, and it's why you wonder how is that determined, if you can assist with that. Let me just give you two responses to the issues, and then others will go to make it as a closing comment.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much for this question. The spread of questions. The process I will go through in attempting to answer this, I will try to speed write and write as many of the things as possible, and where I feel that some of my team can respond, I will refer to them. And I'm hoping that I've been able to capture all of the issues that have been raised. Honourable Chair, in terms of you raise the issue of value for money and perhaps of impact. And you said that it's all well and good to have an unqualified report, but how have you been spending the money? Is there value for impact? And
the outset that I see a lot of the questions are related to this, and this relates to the issue of employment, the unemployment problem in our country that we face today. The role of the CETA has been so far, and the scope of work that the CETA has had to do, is to provide people with an employable skill, and that's where we stop. Perhaps I think even our resources cannot go further than that. And in training people, unemployed people especially, giving them an employable skill such as electrician or millwright, or giving graduates and diplomats from Technicon, in our instance, work experience in terms of, say, lab. A lot of these people get into the labs or the research and development labs of the company and put their feet up. Similarly, learnership. Giving someone that learnership, but thereafter, the onus is either on the company where they serve that learnership to take them on, or they can be put into the open market. But the CETA's main role has always been to provide an employable skill, or to assist the country in providing that employable skill. And you know that even there are hundreds of thousands of people who've been through matric, they went to a technicon or a university or even a private training institution, have got a qualification, and they knock on the company's door, and the company says, "No, we've got no experience, we can't take you." And that's been a big problem. And what we've done is we've, as I mentioned in my presentation, that we as CETAs have to work by a company in our industry. We provide a grant, for instance, to the company. In our instance, it is 30,000 rand to, say, South African breweries, to incentivize them to take these people on, provide them with a structured work experience in their company, thereby enhancing the employable skill of that person. So you might have a degree in microbiology, but no one wants to know about it because you don't have. They could knock on the company, so the company says, "You don't have experience." And most companies, I mean, their motive is profit, and they want guys to hit the road running when they're in the company. So they're not really happy to take on unemployed people, graduate. So we provide them with that skill. In addition, and I'm trying to answer broadly the question, and I see quite a few of the honorable members have raised this. In addition, we have a partnership with an organization called EdExcel. And EdExcel is the largest awarding body of qualifications in the UK and across perhaps a lot of the world. And these are really for vocational qualifications. Five of our qualifications are already accredited with EdExcel. Through EdExcel, we've developed what we call a work readiness program. Now, we attach that program to our learnership. So besides having an academic qualification, go through a learnership or work experience component, and with EdExcel, we've developed this work readiness component so that you have the so-called soft skills necessary when you apply for a job. And to that extent, we've gone in order to try and provide our country with more people with employable skills. As far as getting people jobs, we are not necessarily in a position to do that. That is Business South Africa. It's a matter that has to be, and I know it's being taking place as we speak, but has to be addressed by businesses. CETA cannot, I mean, we just a CETA, and it's a very, very minor component in the corporate world, to the extent that it's only 1% of payroll, so that's how much attention companies pay to CETA. But in our instance, I feel the request really should be at that level, possibly at the NEDLAC level, between business of Bursa Business South Africa, the Trade Union Federation. I'm not sure that Tita is able to really tell a multinational company to change their recruitment practices. So that's just a broad-based type of response to that. And Honorable Chair, the end, you also raised the issue about the further education and training colleges. And I must say that we've been working with FET colleges for the last about 7-8 years. And we've always used them as our training providers with the CETA. Currently, our apprenticeship or artisan development program, we have two FET colleges that do the training, the on-site mentoring, the on-site monitoring and evaluation. We've contracted two FET colleges for that. So we have a long history of having dealt with FET colleges in the past. also, in terms of impact, as I mentioned, this is what we can do, create people with an employable skill. We've got in our planning for the next financial year, and as Honorable Chairman mentioned, should the issue of the CETA landscape be sorted out again, we have in our planning, we've already submitted our strategic plans for next year, is to undertake impact studies into after learnership guys employed, and we can share with you our employment rates of people completing learnerships as an example. With the company that they are serving that learnership with is around 55 to 60%, and the figure is not there. That's the employment rate. But then there's that 40% that do not get employed, and it's a huge resource problem in order to track these guys, which we found. We tried attempted to do that because they you find that they change their cell phone numbers every month, and we can't contact them because they all have stay as you go, etc. So it's a big exercise. I believe that, you know, CETAs do have a role to play, but it must be coordinated more at the national level. I do know when it was with the Department of Labor, they are establishing this database where all unemployed people will register, and so the country can have that kind of intelligence about these people, where they are, what they do. And so typically from a resource point of view, what we can do as FoodBev CETA is conduct impact studies, and we have this in our planning next year, to trace those that do not find employment with the companies in FoodBev CETA that might have went my colleague in the banking CETA with these skills in fresh meat processing and probably got a job with Standard Bank. But then we don't know from there what happens. So those are some of the issues in impact study. In terms of our industry, as I mentioned at the outset, that our customers, the people that we serve, and do serve broadly the nation at large, but our direct customers are the companies. And from the minister's speech, we are legally bound, firstly, to disburse 50% of the levies that they pay to them. That's through regulations and the mandatory grant. And the other, the rest of the balance, in the form of discretionary grants. Also, these must be claimed by the company. So, for a youngster, an apprenticeship, you need to have a company in which to serve that apprenticeship. You need to have a company in which to have your work experience or internship done. Similarly, you need to have a company to have where to do your learnership. Remember, the simple definition of a learnership is the work-based route to getting a qualification. So you have to have a place of work. And that's how these programs are designed. The problem really our country faces is places of work. And I believe that it's a bigger national issue that needs to be addressed. The CETAs as a grouping can contribute to that to the extent of their resources and their mandates. Yes, and
where the factory is, given you the provincial state, that's where the factory is. Typically, factories in winemaking have to be in the Western Cape. That's the climatic thing, really. Beer industry has to be where there is a supply of water that is of very high quality. So the factories are where they're based, really the factor of economics for that company. And I'm not so sure that, that the CETA can really have any impact on that. In terms of providing training, the Honourable Member, yes, I know the Minister's statement that I've quoted, it says provide training, but we, our job as CETA is to facilitate training to happen. In order to do that, we design the product, we design the learnership. That is the structure of that, that, that program, the unit standards, etc. So we design that, we register it with the Department of Education as an official program. That's, we do that. Our second job is the training providers of those learnerships. We do what is called the accreditation of those institutes. Right? So that's quality assurance. They need to meet certain requirements. So that's the extent to which we are involved in terms of the provision of training. Additionally, we provide a grant incentive to companies to undertake that training and to incentivize them to take on unemployed people on learnership. I think that is the sense that we want to capture around the CETA's involvement on learnerships. The issue of the short-term licenses, yes, sir, it is, we've, NSDS 2 has been extended for a year, and the performance and the SLA targets, etc., that we presented to you in our annual reports based on NSDS 2, it's a one-year extension of the license, and yes, it has created uncertainty. The chairman and I, awkward position in that our lease for our building expired in October, and we are unable to keep the landlords away for much longer. And you know, there is quite a prime location, and the demand for that is quite high. And even though we don't have our license for the next 5 years, and the specter of amalgamation hanging over our head, we did a risk assessment, and we made a good business decision, and we extended. So it has had an impact. I understand from some of my colleagues that their seekers are seeing a lot of labor turnover due to the uncertainty of their future. Good, experienced, competent people are leaving the seeker environment, so that's the kind of effect that it has. Longer term planning for the organization, the infrastructure renewal, all of these things have been put on hold. So it did have an impact on the CETA, and currently it does. But I'm assured that by my colleague, Mr. Hannes Hun from the Department of Labor, that the decision will be finalized by the end of this month. Well, that's much. Well, I've got 3 pages of questions, and but I think in the first part, I've captured a lot of what the members have been alluding to in terms of more of an umbrella answer that I've tried to provide the members. And it might answer many of the questions following these.
There's one question raised on the issue of exceeding targets. I think what we do is our budgets are due actually 18 months before the commencement of the financial year. So we use our best estimates to project our plan going forward. But what we do is, as the year rolls out, we have quarterly reviews where we assess our actual income and we calculate whatever possible surpluses there are, and we utilize that in developing programs that are actually used by our sector. So that is one of the reasons why you find that we've exceeded targets in certain of the indicators, if not all of them. I think the performance scorecard, what the criterion based on, it goes across the multi. Okay, I think there's a copy in your pack at the back end, and you'll see it has quite a few criterion on which that is based on, from financial to actual performance to government equity, etc. Thank you.
Most of the things have been answered. I think the only thing is when it comes to the question about rural development and things, I think that's the issue which is been thrown around quite a bit, and I don't think one single CETA can address that issue. There should be more coordination in addressing that issue. There is perhaps a lot which can be done, but you need more coordination if you want to, from the CETA side, training side. I think you've seen also from the explanation which is given that as far as training and workplace training, and things like that, you need businesses in those areas to start with also. A lot of coordination, not only from CETAs, but from other workers. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to open for members to do follow up on the questions. CFO, if you can adjust on your financial, on your annual report, there's indications of surplus. I don't want to assume what it is. Can you just explain what you mean by that surplus in terms of your finances?
All right, I assume that's on the statement of financial performance on page 30. A surplus of 7 million. All right. The 7 million is derived simply from deducting expenses from our income. But we've got to bear in mind that a lot of the learnership programs, apprenticeships, they run more than one financial year. They don't start at a fixed point in time. Also, they start at various parts of the year. So you could have something starting in March, April, May, June, July, or going through. So the surplus will be there because we don't pay our grants all up front. We will disperse them when there are certain criteria and milestones reached. And if you look on a note on commitments, we have on note 23, that's found on page 52, you'll find we have commitments of 114 million. Of that, we have approximately 90% of the funds committed. So, although we've generated a surplus of 7 million, a large portion of that is actually committed. The CEO made a reference to a cash surplus in his presentation. That cash surplus has been budgeted for in the current year's discretionary grants that we will have signed an agreement with the DATT, and we've also had permission from National Treasury to roll over those surplus funds. So that's how that surplus arises.
Madam Chair, if you'll indulge me, if I could just expand a little bit on the issue of surpluses. And again, perhaps national miss or poor understanding of the way he does work. Madam Chair, CETAs do not work with what is so-called exchequer funds. We receive from the companies a levy income that is variable. And there's a two-month lag. For instance, in March levies, we may receive April, May.
end of May. So this is 2 months there. We receive an income that is variable to the extent in our industry of about 5 to 7% per month. And when we budget, we make a well-deducted forecast of what our income will be for the year. So it's a forecast, and it's not cast in concrete. It's not a number that we know upfront. And therefore, I believe it would be imprudent for us to budget in such a way that we can expect a no balance, because we really have uncertainty about what our income will be after 12 months. So therefore, we create a bit of a buffer, because that's generally good practice, so that we don't end up in a situation where we overspend on money that we don't have. So we budget quite conservatively, etc. But as the CFO mentioned, is that we do quarterly updates, revisions of our cost centers, etc., just to try and minimize the surplus in the end. CETAs are unlike, it's like any other business. You have a sales forecast, and on a monthly basis, you bring in sales. It's dependent on the sales. Mm-hmm. The same thing with CETAs. On a monthly basis, we have income that, in some instances, vary quite considerably. And we need to do a budget up front, but the budget is based on the income forecast for the year, which sometimes differs quite significantly to the actual. So therefore, when we budget, we have to be quite conservative in our approach. I've included for your benefit a letter. You see at the back of your pack, it's the letter that I've written to the Mail and Guardian, illustrating just this issue. So that's another issue that appears in the public eye, that CETAs have these surpluses. Perhaps huge surpluses are not warranted. I believe a 7 million surplus is a decent number.
Thank you. Can I just follow up comments? Just a minute each, so that we can start with the, just for the other one from the reason. Not you, I've not noted you. I've got Tina who raised her hand a long time ago, and she has not had an opportunity. I'll start with her. Honorable Tina, you'd come, Honorable. Oh, Honorable Magazine will be the second time. Those who have not spoken initially. And then you'll come, Honorable Fandarabi. And then Honorable Shana will be next. Khatel, you'll be the last one to close for. Oh, Honorable Mpontan will be the last. A minute each member, I'm just counting the time so that you start with me.
My question is on page 18, is a follow-up from my question. As such, when you look at the graph, there's an improvement for the year between 5 to 10. Yes, I agree with you on the annual report, but you need to get a track record as well. How was the performance of the future? That graph doesn't tell me much. If ever you can get an explanation, yes, I agree, the program don't have the same cohort as to say these are the people who are getting in, if we're talking over the period of 5 years. But really, if you see those who entered, those who have completed, and now what is still in progress in 2010, it tells me that there's not much that is being done, really. The product, the throughput that you are looking at, it gives much to be desired when you look at that graph. I'll be happy to get an explanation on it. But lastly, Chairperson, I'm a little bit worried about the response that you got from the Chairperson of the CETA when you say, yes, under rural development, there's not much that they can do as a CETA until all the CETAs might come together and see what it is that they can do on rural development. And really, I think that is a matter of concern for us as CETAs here, listening to the CETA saying that, even if there is nothing that much that we've done. But I thought, we wanted to know what is it that they're doing, what are their challenges, what are the things that they need, rather than them saying, unless everybody come on board, there is nothing that we do much as a CETA. I think really for that attitude from this CETA, it's something that we cannot accept as the portfolio committee. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks, Jefferson. Chair, I am tempted just to ask a question.
I've had answers. But the question that I'm going to ask, maybe this question, it will unpack some of the your answers that we have answered. In this, is it the annual report? No, it's not the pamphlet. Yeah, it's a pamphlet. You are saying the food babysitter, one of your key activities in terms of the National Skills Development Fund strategy is to regularly to research the status of skills across the dairy, the beverage, process food industry. But my question is that in the same tone as you are operating in this industry, how do you measure your impact in terms, because you are saying you are not a training institution, you are not giving training, but you are teaching, isn't that so? Or you are giving tools to people that don't have skills to go and work or find a job. But the question is for me now, how do you measure this? What is your impact? Do you have a data that you can show us that this is how we have impacted in terms of giving the tools to people that don't have the skills to be employed?
Thanks, Honorable Van
Der Vesteren. Thank you, Chief. You mentioned in your annual report that your income from the National Skills Fund has dropped considerably. We are under the impression that the National Skills Fund is sitting with a lot of money and that they do not have the need for these reserves as you have. They don't have the long-term commitments. Can you please expand and say, you know, why is that? And is there anything that we should do about that?
Thank you, Honorable Mushan.
Thank you, President. I agree to your presentation of page 18, and I think I believe something can be done to improve it. You see, yes, we understand that companies are in culture, that they should learn about it, and Western Cape. But when one looks at Northern Cape, 0%, Northwest Province 1%, Mpumalanga 1%, and 2% of Limpopo. One is tempted to check with you if it's not possible to check the learnership where they come from, because maybe they are forced to come from these places that we're talking about to Gauteng and to Western Cape, because that's where we're having these companies. And I know that perhaps it's not, I'm not even sure, but I believe that you don't build companies, you just work through them. But because you are entrusted by the government to deal with leadership, can't you have some influence that says this company needs to invade these other places in the long term? We can't be satisfied and say it's fine, there are no companies in these other places, because South Africa will remain like rich at one particular end, and the other places will remain poor. There can be changes if the figures put their foot down, I believe. Thank you.
Let's actually just get a number figure out of the percentage. What does that translate to? on what Honorable Mushal is saying. Your provincial spread of employees, do you have, if you have the numbers, if you can share with us, not in percentage. Honorable Khatebi, you were next.
Thanks, ma'am. I'm trying to check the relevancy of surplus vis-a-vis the PFMA. CEO and the chairperson, they are busy charging there. Because according to the Public Financial Management Act, we don't have what we call surplus in a institution that is under government. I'm trying to get an understanding. Surplus, according to PFMA, in actual sense, it's an under expenditure. When you say surplus, then you are becoming a BE consortium. I just want to get a clarity on that. How did you come to the issue of surplus? Because according to the PFMA that I know, there's nothing like surplus. It's another expenditure, or it's always over expenditure. Check.
Honorable
Ponchan. I thank comrade Ken, I stole it, my partner.
Is it a case at an issue? Yeah. just to say, I think, and I think those are the, just maybe while I give the CEO the invitation to respond. Where I'm sitting, I think committee members, we need a thorough engagement with the city. There's quite a number of things that we need to drill down to. And drilling through an annual report sometimes does not assist in looking at the issues and the opportunities and the strategy. And I think that Annele, we will need to be the chair of the portfolio committee, Honorable Marisol. When it comes to the strategic plans, when we do the strategic plan, just to allocate enough time. Because annual reports are a response to what has been said. And unfortunately, this process happened with the Department of Labor. And from one sitting in terms of education and skills, I think we need to be quite specific on target when we do the annual report, so that we gauge specifically what you hope to achieve. The issue of targets versus the demand, broadly, it's quite an important one to say out there what is the demand and where is the demand, and what is it. And unfortunately, even on the report, CEO, it does not reflect when you talk about your learnership. You don't specify your employed and unemployed learnership, what you have achieved and what you have not achieved. It doesn't on your annual report, which for me becomes a bit of a challenge. So that's why I'm going back to say generally there's a need for us to really have a thorough engagement so that when it comes to the point of the annual report, we evaluate based on what that I outline in detail and to the target and all that. Because at times we sit and look at the annual report, failure or unfailure, we might judge you based on what we see. And the issue is that we're looking at it from the fact that when I spoke earlier on the meeting. So that's why we're feeling that there is a need for us to really go around in the issue. And I think we should arrange that meeting just for the practices when the annual report in the work of the future has been drilled down in terms of where you are. And you can sense the issue of, that's what I'm saying to you when you respond, please indicate in terms of numbers your provincial spread. The reason, and I can't remember if you specifically highlighted the FETs, that there's quite, when we interact with the stakeholders, because we do go to these provinces, and these are some of the things that are raised with us as a portfolio committee. So we've got to find a way of finding synergy in what we get as feedback, and through our interaction, we also get that synergy. But again, there was somebody who was saying, even around the issue of advocacy work, that people understand what you're doing out there and how to access you. So those are some of the things I wanted just to highlight.
I apologize, I was thinking the George question.
You are out of order. Don't bring things which are out of order to the meeting. It will be chased back to the meeting. Actually, it's you.
Again, I shall try and highlight some of the issues. This is the graph on page 18. It's a snapshot view of where we are. We are aware that the companies are taking way too long, in many instances, to complete the learnerships. We have implemented two approaches that we have. One, I've personally signed and written letters to the executive management of a company, should we find that a company is lagging behind on learnerships. And in many instances, we do pay grants, but if we find insufficient progress, we send them a letter with an invoice requesting a repayment of that grant. And that is all in our grant funding policy. This matter was highlighted at our annual general meeting, which we had recently, where we touched base with the companies on this matter. There is perhaps legally that's the restricting factor. Legally, how much we can do in respect of that with the companies. Ma'am, this is a snapshot view. It's work in progress, as it was mentioned by one of my team, that learnerships that typically where...
When you say a snap view, what do you mean?
This is a view in time. At the moment, this is our stat. Right? However, what it represents is over the past, say, 5 years, how many people, and we find that there are companies that still have people who started the learnership 5 years ago. Halfway through the learnership, the young man has got another job opportunity, has gone, so we find that learnerships are not completed.
We're interested in the current financial year. Is this the reflection of the current financial year?
This is cumulative data, man. The reflection of the current financial year you will find in the tables under indicator 2.8, which is for employed people. The training programs are currently for employees of companies, and indicator 4.1, which is the figures for unemployed people on learning programs.
Do you have representatives of PREP in any of the provinces besides the people who are employed in industries? Your offices are in Gauteng.
Yes.
And do you have anyone that is in within provinces?
Well, we undertake, in fact, from a financial model, we undertake visits. In fact, as we came here this morning on the 6 o'clock flight, two of my additional staff members were here to visit companies. So we undertake to go to the companies. I found it to be financially not feasible to run an office in each of the provinces.
Literally what it means is that if I'm not already in the sector, I would not know about you, I would not get involved with you. If I'm a young person wanting to learn a ship, I'm based in Harib, I would not know about you because you go to industry.
Well, unfortunately, ma'am, that is largely the case. However, if you look at, you see, all of that we've done up to now, is within the ambit of a national strategy that we have to work to, and that is the National Skills Development Strategy. And it's the strategy attempted to speak to all of the issues when it was developed. We have a window of opportunity now with NSDF 3, where we can shape strategically what the country wants. And CETAs are really implementation vehicles. We are not strategy-making type organizations. We are the vehicles that need to implement whatever strategy is determined by the country, and we work within the constraints, the confines of that strategy. And therefore, we have all of these targets, etc. And if the strategy does not address this,
The issue really is with the status.
My comments here on understand that particular. We'd have to come back to that, and I'm looking at the department, because the point I wanted to drive at, it's fine, we can leave it at that point. If I maybe respond to the others to the
In terms of research, honorable member, I mentioned in my presentation that in this next financial year, we've got, in terms of our planning, to do impact studies. Now, we haven't worked out the mechanisms yet, but we'll look at traitor studies for students, etc., or prospective. The research that we currently undertake is largely around the scarce skills in our industry. So we know what to concentrate our resources on, really the scarce skills. Typically, it comes up as, in our industry, processing and packaging operations, technical, which is largely apprenticeships or artisan development, and again, in our industry, it is managerial level deficiencies. And we concentrate, therefore, resources around addressing those scarce skills. But I note your concern, and I assure you, ma'am, that it's in the planning. Tools to enable skills development. Yes, sir, we provide the tools, as I mentioned earlier, it's the actual qualifications, the unit standards, etc. We accredit the training providers, and we provide the funding. And it's literally taking the horse to the water, but you need to, the horse nearly really needs to drink over. So we provide all of this. We provide the framework of training, we provide the training program, so to speak. We provide the assurance of the providers, of the assessors, etc. And we provide the funding. It's up to the company to come and put all of that together. And I don't know exactly how much more. Perhaps within the resources and constraints of what we can that can provide. Impact on rural development. We've included a loose leaf insert in your pack, but I'll ask one of our team members, Kotso. He's also intimately involved with the new venture creation project. The work is these are areas in his portfolio. New venture creation, work experience, and non-government organizations, amongst many other things. So if you'd ask Kotso to please quickly address that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another question of. On the question of alignment with government thinking or national priorities, I would like to say that we follow that closely. For example, during the launch of your rural development in Miyeshi, we were there, and as a result of that, we've got a few projects running there, one of which is a bakery. Then there was a question also of how we select youth, you know, for empowerment, for entrepreneurial development. We work closely with municipalities and the Department of Labor in various provinces because we work in the context of the location, you know, where we're going to deliver these things. So therefore, our selection process really is tied closely with local communities and local bodies. We also work very closely with the National Youth Agency, you know, in executing our project. Thank you.
Range of questions, can I touch quickly on them? There was a question about the NSF fund, and I see you got that from our financials. We applied for and were awarded an amount of, I think, it was 30 million, and that project is nearing its closure. And how these NSF funds work is we have a drawdown schedule with the National Skills Fund, and this 5 million represents the final drawdown schedule for that financial year. However, it forms part of a bigger project of about 13 million dollars. So that's just the portion that is drawn down for that period, for that fund. There was a question around the workplace skills plans and the annual training reports. Lidl is our corporate services manager, but under the portfolio is the workplace skills plans and annual training reports. So I'll just ask her to respond to that.
In terms of that, yes, we do analysis in terms of WSBs and annual training reports. And currently within our industry, it's probably between 50% and 80% of planned training is implemented by a company. At their request, we have also set the minimum requirement at 60%. Thank you. And in terms of that as well, we do audit 10% of all our companies that do comply with WSCs and ACRs to see that what they report in the annual training report is what actually is implemented and that they do have backup documentation to prove it as well.
Okay, thank you. I think for the department, I think we need to look at this issue of teachers' accessibility to the public. Because from where I'm sitting, all teachers are in housing. I come from housing and many teachers are in housing. But the true sense of it is that does it make sense to, for all of them to be in housing? If truly the issue can be spread them across the country, head offices, why should they be in housing? I'm just throwing this back. We are fortunate we have the teacher new landscape. We'll be engaging as a portfolio committee. And I think this is one of the things that we must look at. Housing does not have agriculture, much domination of agriculture. So you can't justify why you must have agriculture and feature based in housing. I'm just saying, for example, these are some of the things that we've got to look at as we do this new landscape. And I'm thinking that there's quite a number of things, and hence I alluded to the issue of the stress plans. Unfortunately, by the time we come to the stress plans, as a portfolio committee, when we input into that process, the landscape process would have finished, would have been in the new, with the new mandate. I think we are concluding quite soon on that one. I remember quite well the target was. We are now entering October. I think the target for the minister was October going to cabinet. And then we should, by the time we come back as parliament, when we come back to our teaching next year, the teachers should be re-engineered and all that. I'm just raising those things as part of what we should look at as an institution, as the highest. Education is to just look at how, because it's an issue that comes to us as portfolio committee, accessibility of teachers to general public. It's an outcry across the board. In all the provinces we engage with, whether you talk about young people, you talk about people who do not have, they just say, even just to go, because you have people who are in rural areas, they do not have access to your computers, they can't go to your website. And if you're talking about a young person who's unemployed, coming from a poor family, hoping that if I pass my trip, the only way to get is through skills development so that I can be employable. Therefore, if I can't access this information, I do not have this information, meaning that I'm damned, condemned to remain in poverty, to remain in my situation, and my life will never change. And if we are to turn things around, we need to make sure that part of the vehicles that government has are accessible to the people. So this is the message that as a portfolio committee has sent to the department. But there is a need for us to look at this, and I'm going to just have a few words, and then we close on the presentation and allow Benefitter to start. I'm running ahead of, are we far away from my son? Just to give you a few minutes.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I'm going to be short. And Honorable Members, when basically the issue that we are currently discussing, and that's the access, the status accessibility in provinces, I can just mention, in the current system, you know, in terms of the service level agreement, I mean, it's basically, we call it an indicator, where the system must basically indicate the accessibility and the presence as well as their performance in all provinces. And we have, for instance, we call it success indicator number 5, where the CITES must report on, firstly,
if they have direct physical presence in a specific province, as well as an indirect presence in a province. And at the end of the financial year, they will be assessed on their involvement. But I fully agree with you, Honorable Chair, that there is room for improvement, and we are looking at that, because if we look at the way the sitters are performing, not all, some, then one can see some in some provinces, I mean, they're actually absent, or they're not that much active. But just to emphasize the department, I mean, we're currently trying to deal with this specific issue, but I think, like I've indicated, there's room for improvement. And then, Honorable Chair, while I'm talking, just coming also, maybe if I can just briefly touch on the remuneration of board members. Currently, the issue is managed in terms of the approved CETA constitutions. And you're 100% correct that, I mean, there's inconsistency when we look at the remuneration of different CETA boards. Now, for a matter of interest, some CETAs, I mean, they're not paying a single cent to board members, because they are saying to the members, you part of the industry, you must basically support and contribute to the industry, therefore we do regard this as part of your functions. Others, I mean, they have specific policies on remuneration of board members. For instance, in the constitution you will find that they have, for instance, the remuneration committee looking at the remuneration of board members, or they will have, for instance, the audit committee also looking at those type of issues. Now, the guideline currently by the department is, you know, National Treasury guide on members of committees. But I must also mention, Honorable Chair, that the department is also concerned about what is currently happening, and we've requested all the CETAs to submit to us their current policies and details on remuneration of board members, because the view of the department is that they would like to incorporate, you know, the National Treasury requirement in the Constitution, basically to make that the maximum and to make that, you know, a prescript for boards then to comply with, so then they cannot go beyond what is approved by National Treasury. So currently we are looking at that, and we're going to recommend that to the CETAs, and because lastly, what I want to emphasize is it's important to note that Section 9 of the Skills Development Act requires that a CETA must be established with an approved constitution, and it's the minister that must approve the constitution. So if he wants it, then with consultation, then he will basically include it. Thanks, Manager.
Thank you very much, Ms. Marie. I think that assists us, and as we continue to engage it with broaden the work and improve on what we do as all stakeholders within the sector. Just to take this opportunity to thank the delegation from the Food Bank. As I said, you definitely have more time with us in the future. We'll make sure that we allocate some time, because there is still a room for us to engage further on a number of issues. But to thank you very much for the presentation. And now we'll take the bank feature. So you can have 2 minutes, members, just to start to